Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. If you're building an AI company and thinking about how to go from cool demo to global scale, this is your guy. Today I'm joined by Carlos Reyna, the first investor and GTM master at 11 Labs, one of the fastest growing AI companies in the world. Carlos is not just an operator, he's a GTM architect for the AI era. And today, we're going deep on what it actually takes to win. Carlos, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Hey, Martin. Thank you so much for having me here. Absolute pleasure being here.
Awesome. Carlos, you were the first GTM hire at 11 Labs, right? What was the first move you made after joining?
I think like for us, when we launched, we started getting a lot of traction from a product-led growth perspective. But for me, the most important part was like trying to figure out what's going to sustain the company over the long term. So the first thing was like, we need to figure out how we do B2B from day one. And I remember like we launched at the end of January 2023. Within a month, we had closed already our first two enterprise customers. And we had more than 1 million users and all of that stuff. We were like 7 people in the company, right? But that was fundamentally like, and then of course, like to close the first two enterprise customers, what is everything? Like you need to actually like figure out your ICPs. You need to figure out like a lot of your pitch. I did like probably like 50 iterations on the pitch, on the value of the product. So there was a lot of testing and experimentation on what was working and what was not working within those 30 days. Because for me, it's super important you build momentum, right? So if within 30 days or like 60 days, you build a very strong momentum because you've iterated on pretty much everything. And the next things like are much easier, right? So like we tested a lot of pricings. We tested about like, I put together like the first legal doc around like the term sheet and we call the terms of engagement, right? It was like super simple because like 30 days, we don't have time to engage lawyers because they're going to need like a month to put together a document. Let's put something together roughly and then we'll figure out later on how we scale this, right? So, but it was like the 31st days for me were like critical to like do a lot of iteration testings to understand what was going to be driving the business going forward.
Love it. I'd love to hear about it. Carlos, GTM in AI isn't like a, you know, SaaS 2.0. It's faster, it's weirder globally by default. And what makes, you know, AI GTM fundamentally different than anything else? Not many, because I wanted to just think about it, you know, because AI is like relatively still like a new thing that people are like, every company will be AI company in the future, but like not many people have done the successful GTM, like the whole trip so far. So I'm super curious to hear all these things from you.
And it's very interesting because like I actually spend a lot of time on this and working with other founders. So as you said earlier, like I'm also an angel investor and I've done a lot of tickets across the world. For me, like the biggest difference on this like second wave or GTM, like SaaS 2.0, if you want, is the fact that like it's the execution, right? So its speed of execution has actually like increased dramatically. Previously, if you were selling B2B enterprise contracts, you will be doing anywhere between 12 to like 18 month sales cycles. Mm-hmm. Today, you can do like 30 days, 60 days, 90 day sales cycles with enterprise contracts. That's like a dramatic change. That's number one. The second one is like this like overemphasis for everyone, which I really like on the product-led growth like segment. Customers or people that can test your product. So by the time you start pitching them an enterprise version of it or like an upselling opportunity, they're very familiar. They're like those leads are very hot. Like things can move extremely quickly just because they know what is good. They've tested it and they see the value that like you're essentially generating. I really like the fact that like it's land and expand for most of the companies, whether that is like for 11 Labs or that is for Anthropic or OpenAI or Cursor or like whatever you wanted. Just because like then essentially you're able to close a contract fairly quickly, even if it's like a low amount. And then the work happens a bit later where you need to upsell them. You need to help them like grow that account. And it's in contracts in the previous waves where like you would try to like size the opportunity as much as possible and be like, okay, this is a $500,000 opportunity. I'm going to be pitching like $500,000 contract. The problem is like if you pitch a $500,000 contract, there's so many layers that actually need to say, give a thumbs up to approve that contract. That's why it takes you like 18 months, 12 to 18 months to get there. if you essentially start very quickly by signing a $24,000 or $50,000 contract, then very likely you will end up needing like two approval layers, right? And then if the contract keeps growing, because you're focused on land and expand model, means that like your contract will keep expanding and your goal of like $500,000, then no one else needs to give approvals later on, right? So that's a big difference in the like execution and speed. And I also think like the third piece or like final piece, like the return investment. Like previously we all had to play like very strongly on return investment calculations, like this is what's happening. Like this is the payback period, all of those things. Like today you can see that like fairly quickly. It is like there is nothing hidden in there. Like you've been able to play with the product before like becoming like an enterprise customer, for instance, or like something else. Mm-hmm. You know what the return investment is from day one. Then those conversations become a lot easier in general.
Let's talk traction. What did the early signs of, you know, PMF, product market fit at 11 Labs really look like?
So we were like, the initial focus for us when we launched was content creator and media creation tools in general, right? So that was like our end goal was like, we want to be the number one tool for those content creators and media companies. And I think like we actually saw it fairly quickly because when we launched through this product-led growth motion, then content creators started giving us like very good feedback. Like literally like, everyone was like fundamentally like, yes, there's all of these problems, but the quality is there. The fact that humanness is there, like the mistakes that we all make are actually there, right? Like that's what makes it very different from anything in the market. So we realized we had something quite unique, but I wouldn't call it still product market fit until you're able to actually sell to enterprises, right? Because like the community is fantastic. We all love it. Like this like prosumer like segment is great. But if you're building a very long-lasting business, then you need to be able to actually like tap the enterprise segment, whether that is like SMB, mid-market, or pure like enterprise side. So until we were able to actually reach and sign some contracts in media and entertainment, I still was not sure that we had product market fit. And that's why like a lot of the iteration continued for the following like months, just because like signing one contract, you might be lucky. Signing two contracts, start showing something. But until you don't sign like 20, 30 contracts in that specific segment, I don't have belief that you've achieved product market fit, right? And it also links to revenues. You can either do it the number of contracts or you can do it like linked to revenues. So for us, like content creators showing the value, showing that like we were displaying like results for them and getting good feedback, this was a sign. But until we actually started closing a decent amount of like enterprise contracts, for me, that's when we reached like PMF on that segment. Good, we nailed it. Now, what's the next segment that we also need to nail? So we started adding like people on that segment for media entertainment so that we could go much quicker. Then the next segment was like conversational AI, real-time use cases, all of those segments. Great, we don't have product market fit. How do we reach product market fit? So we started from scratch on those segments too.
Amazing. Carlos, you've led GTM in Europe, the US, India, Korea, Japan. I don't know if I'm missing anything. How do you adapt when scaling AI globally? You know, what's actually different market to market?
It's tough. Like there's a lot of cultural elements for sure, right? One thing that I established like very early on was like every single market that we wanted to launch, we had to prove that we could generate revenues from HQ. So it meant like I would spend a lot of time trying to understand like the market, the conditions, and how to actually pitch it, what like triggers them, what are the key competitors in there, who are the potential like solutions that like other people have been using, even if they're not competitors. So all of those pieces to actually have a full picture of the market and then essentially generate the pitch that was resonating there. And then having companies that actually you want to pitch. So doing a lot of outbound. I always say that like, I'm the SDR in chief, right? Like I love outbounding companies, hearing their feedback, understanding what works, what doesn't work. And then I will transfer those deals to like but for me, it's important just because like to be able to do good outbounds and to be able to actually have meaningful conversations, sign meaningful contract, you need to understand the culture. Like if you don't understand it, you're completely dead, right? So when we decided to actually, we were going to be investing a lot in Japan, actually spend the entire summer last year, like figuring out like what's going to trigger the Japanese customers. Like how do we pitch in there? Like why do we want to actually like go deep in there? Like understanding, for instance, like for the first time ever in Japan, the media entertainment business was generating more revenues from the international markets than the actual local markets. Mm-hmm. So my pitch for the media entertainment companies in Japan essentially became like, you have an asset that is all of the international markets for your IP, whether that is manga or anime and so on, that you are under monetizing just because you're passing that to resellers or like distributors in other markets. They don't really do good dubs. They're just putting some subtitles in there and essentially you're losing a ton of money. So the pitch ended up becoming like, you could be owning that like dubbing. You could be owning that distribution. We can help you with that. And that started resonating really well. But just like, you need to go very deep in the culture, the dynamics of the market and all of those pieces.
Yeah. Super interesting. Carlos, I'm jumping a bit from different topics because I really want, like, since I have you here, I really want to create this kind of a GTM masterclass for founders building an AI out of this episode. A lot of founders, a lot of AI founders obsess over tech, but what do they miss when it comes to GTM?
One common thing that I always like fight with everyone about is products don't sell themselves, right? Like it's like, and I know like it's like challenging, but because like as a founder, a technical founder, you think like, I built the best product. Like I've done all of this research. I've done all of these pieces. We've spent like countless amounts of hours. Like we're really good on the product side. That doesn't mean that you can have any level of traction, right? Like, the world is full of like companies that like build crazy good products but failed on the go-to-market strategy. Like the worst product with a fantastic go-to-market strategy and execution, not only a strategy, can become a $1 billion company. The best product with like a poorly executed strategy and or even like thinking like products sell themselves, like they will just like join the startup graveyard, right? A good example is like Google Glass. Like such a revolutionary product back in the day, like visionary, like, and like the Google founders, like was talking about, especially that 2 weeks ago in an interview, right? Like it was not the right time, but also like the strategy, the go-to-market strategy was like poorly executed and designed, right? I think fundamentally is like, you still need to believe that like your product need to be sold by someone. People buy from people, unless you have someone that is able to actually like generate those meaningful relationships. Like it's going to be tough to properly build a community, properly build enterprise contracts, like make sure that you're getting the right feedback and all of those things, right? And that's fundamentally like for me, the most important item. Like you build a good product. Great. Now let's actually sell it. And to sell it, you need people that know what they do.
100%. Carlos, what's your mental model for the very first GTM motion? Like is it sales-led, product-led, content? How do you decide where to start?
For me, it needs to be like product-led growth, right? It's like people want to like, if you want to like reach a certain level of revenues fairly quickly and make sure that like it's kind of a flywheel event, PLG is the item. Like I can test it. I can see the value straight away, but it forces everyone to be a lot more lean, right? Like, and for me, that's when it goes deeper because like, even if you decided not to open your product from a PLG perspective, the fact that you have a PLG perspective, or like you're thinking about PLG, will force you to actually have automated billing systems, right? One thing that we did at 11 Labs that we are very proud of and that we never talked publicly about it is the fact like it doesn't really matter whether you're paying us $22 a month or $1 million a month. It doesn't matter. Everything is automatically calculated and the bills are like sent automatically. There is no one doing manual reconciliations. There is no one doing anything manually at all. Nice. No one is allowed to touch billing unless it's a finance person or like someone in the leadership team, right? Like that is fundamentally what it is. So it just means that like as a company, we have what, 5 people, 6 people in the finance team. Like we're massive in terms of revenues and the value creation for customers. But it's because we thought from an idea of like product-led growth. Like if we need to grow and we want to reach like this unicorn status and we want to do it quickly and we want to get there soon, like everything needs to be as automated as possible across the board so that no one can make a ton of mistakes, even if they still be able people to make mistakes and all of that stuff. But it needs to be like driven for growth and execution, right? So it's beyond the fact like you opening your platform, fine. But if you don't have your full backend, your full infrastructure from an operational perspective, finance, like streamlined to accommodate that growth, you're still going to be doing things manually and that's going to constrain your growth straight away.
Carlos, let's say I'm an early AI startup with some traction. What's the first GTM hire I should make and what should I absolutely avoid?
For me, I always recommend like to my portfolio and anyone that I talk to is like hire someone that is like very flexible, that has very high energy levels, that is very independent, that like is willing to make mistakes and test a lot of things, right? Like in the early days, you need to test a ton of stuff. Like crazy ideas will win. If you have someone that is like testing like 10 ideas, one of those ones might be okay. But then if they test like 50 ideas, one of those ones might be excellent and might be delivering like the next 100 million in revenues, right? Like that is the type of person that you want to hire as number one. And then I always think that like the best way to actually like make sure that there is a really good checks and balances and like deliver and push people, go to market people to actually go very deep is by putting some milestones. It's like, okay, great. So instead of actually like giving you this crazy salary and crazy equity package, what if we do it based on milestones? Let's do like this first package when you join. So salary X and then equity Z. Right? And then if you reach certain level of milestone in terms of revenues within a specific time frame, then you unlock additional equity pool and additional like salary. And then there's commissions and all of that stuff if you want it, right? But then that essentially forces people to like deliver a ton of value extremely quickly to reach that milestone. Because like go-to-market people are always incentivized. They're like very passionate about like sales. They're passionate about like the milestone and the challenge together. So if you tell them like, you need to reach, I'm just making that up, like 10 million in revenues in the next like 18 months, they will just go for it, right? Especially because that triggers like, I don't know, like X percent inequity that like starts vesting from either the day they started or that moment onwards, right? So I think like for me that like it's that combination of like flexibility, someone that is iterating a lot, doing a ton of experimentation and all of that stuff together with a package that is like milestone driven.
Amazing. Yeah, makes perfect sense. And I love the approach. The 11 Labs story has strong distribution plus brand. How do you balance brand and distribution in early stage AI? Can you win actually without one or
no? No. I mean, you could win without a brand in many ways, right? So initially, like if you try to like from a go-to-market side, like try to figure out like what drives like some brand within the communities, like you need it, right? So if you've identified like content creation or creator economy is your market or your area initially, then you need to be known in that segment. If you've like identified that your market is like customer support, you need to be like known in that segment to be able to actually grow quicker. But still, distribution is king, right? Like I always think about it, like if 11 Labs needs to be like $100 billion company, we need to like be everywhere. Like you need to wake up and you need to be using 11 Labs because like you are like listening to a podcast that was created with AI voices or because it was dubbed into by 11 Labs. You are interacting with your airline or like, I don't know, like your utility company because like your like water bill is wrong. Then there's going to be an AI agent that 11 Labs powers, right? So your entire day, you're going to bed and then you're watching a series that essentially like has been dubbed by 11 Labs or that has been helped with like produced with using 11 Labs. So there's so many things in there that for me is like, that's the distribution. So how do I nail it? Like there's like the short-term side, which is like pure salespeople, account execs, SDRs, customer success. And there is the long tail, like brand partnership building ecosystem, like reseller ecosystem, like cloud providers that like can help a lot. Is it like Wiz, for instance, that like more than 90% or like around the 90% of their sales were like through cloud providers, like distributors, right? Then it's a fantastic way of actually growing your business. And then if your segment is also content creation, why not to have like very strategic partnerships directly with the content creator, like media companies, like music industry, all of that stuff, like so that like you're able to actually reach much wider asset sites of the business.
Amazing. Carlos, let's talk investing for a second. You were the first investor at 11 Labs and you invested in like 60 plus startups worldwide. What's one pattern you've spotted in the ones that break out? Generally, what's your personal thesis? Like how do you invest?
I love technical founders. I go very deep with them. So I'm there like, I always tell them like I'm an employee without being an employee, right? So you don't have to pay me a salary. You don't have to actually give me equity. I want to give you my money and I want to actually help you. I want to be in some customer calls. I want to be there like when we start discussing about pricing. I want to help like the pitch. I will coach you on the pitch and the value proposition, all of that stuff. so that we can like reduce the amount of time that it takes us to actually get to product market fit and the next milestone in terms of like revenues and fundraising. That's how I usually work with the founders, usually like backing very technical founders. And then companies that essentially like want to build globally. It's like global mindset, even if they're building in Europe or they're building in the US or they're building in Mexico, it doesn't really matter for me. It's more like, do you want to win globally? And you have that global mindset versus like one specific individual market. It's been working quite well. So I cannot complain. Like first ever investment that I did was like Revolut. And then I've done 60 plus over the past 7 years, 7-8 years.
Amazing.
It's been really, really okay. It's I cannot complain. And I love it.
I love it.
I think like it's twofold, right? It's like the fact that like, well, I mean, why not to help the ecosystem? Even if you're not investing at the end because like it doesn't match the criteria. Like I love helping the founders. Like they know that like even if I'm not deploying my money, if they can contact me anytime they want, like I will help them there, right? So it's part of the ecosystem. If we're building a healthy ecosystem in Europe or across the world, I do believe that we need to help each other.
I love it. I love the approach. I love the how much hands-on it is. Carlos, I also know that you've said like in every seat, you know, like operator, investor, advisor. What's one thing early stage investors get wrong about backing, you know, GTM talent or motions?
And I think it's a deeper problem in Europe, right? Like, and everyone, like we all know, like operator-led funds are like still not like big thing in Europe, right? For instance. So that means that like fundamentally you are not going to be able to help your portfolio companies as much as you should. The idea that, and there's like this is something very strange, right? Like with VCs like trying to dig deep and say like, oh, what's your moat? What's your defensibility over the long term, right? My question to them is always like, what's your defensibility? What's your moat? If your moat and your pitch is saying like, I have like a $50 million fund or a $100 million fund, I will give you money and I will help you. But then you give money and then you forget about the company and you don't never help because you want to be in the board and you help in the board, then you're missing the point. Like today, money is a commodity, right? And that's the reality. Like the best founders are able to actually raise at any point in time from top investors because they can. Now, the key item is like, what's your value to the entire ecosystem and that company? So building a company from a go-to-market perspective is like extremely hard. If you have never done it, then those companies need intros. They need like pressing discussions. They need to practice their pitch like a million times. Like they need to understand how to actually like find the right market and how to actually like nail distribution. If you're not going to be able to help them, then you're only providing money and intros to other VCs. It's a commodity, like forget about it. Like it's just not worth it. So like fundamentally, and in an age of AI where like managing a fund is less important because you can have like AI agents, you will end up having AI agents that actually manage an entire fund in the next like 18 months, then what's your value proposition as an investor? And that's a key question. That's a key question.
Carlos, if you had to write a playbook called How to Build a GTM for an AI Startup, what's chapter one called?
Focus on your community. Identify your community. Focus on your community. It doesn't really matter what it is. It can be accountants. Great. Look at Blue Book. Blue Book, those guys are amazing. They went to Y Combinator. Like they focus fundamentally on building a community within the consulting space, like the accounting space. They're doing fantastically well. Look at the Level Labs. We focused originally on building the content creator economy and ecosystem. It works super well. That propelled us to other markets. Look at, Lovable, right? Like, so build that specific community in the early days that are going to be extremely passionate about your product and can amplify your voice. That's chapter one.
Amazing. I love it.
And it's like, and you should not even focus on the revenue side. Like, no one cares about the revenues in the early days. Like, if you can show that, like, your community is offering, like, showing traction and they're engaged, everything else follows through. Like, of course, like with execution and like planning and like distribution, all of that stuff, but like everything becomes much easier.
Beautiful. Carlos, now is time of the podcast where I actually usually play a game, a little game with my guests. It's kind of a rapid fire question. So I'm going to shoot questions at you and you're going to give me fast answers. Are you up for it?
Let's go for it.
All right, let's go. So what's one GTM belief you've totally reversed on?
You need a very large organization to reach 100 million in revenues. That's like completely wrong. Like in the age of like generative AI and agentic AI, you need a very small team to reach 100 million.
Best and worst advice you've heard about early stage GTM?
Best would be product-led growth together with like product-led sales. Mm. That's like an absolute winner. Worst is close your product, like make it more exclusive. That's like just a bullshit.
Okay. Your favorite GTM channel?
LinkedIn.
Nice. Why?
I think like you can cater like the messaging you have, like especially in the Western world, right? Like or like excluding Japan and China and Korea, you find the right people in LinkedIn. You just need to craft a message. And then there's so many good tooling right now that will help you like with insights and like well, like intent. LinkedIn has also like been stepping up their game as well. And I think it's a fantastic tool. It's for me one of the best channels. However, if you're building in LATAM or if you're building in India, forget about those two channels.
Okay.
Of course, they can be complementary, but WhatsApp is the one that you need to nail.
Nice. That's so insightful. Carlos, if you had to run GTM, actually, this is a nice segue to the next question. If you had to run GTM with just three tools, what would you pick?
Clay. Any CRM, I think like you have like plenty of them, like Salesforce or HubSpot, especially and so on. Atio, we started with Atio and then migrated to Salesforce. So we have Clay, any CRM, and then I would also say like Gong for sure.
All right. What's one question you always ask before hiring someone for GTM?
Ooh, I love the idea of like, I ask people like pitch me 11 labs. As if I was, I don't know, like company X, Nestle or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't really matter much the company. It's more about like, how creative are they about pitching? Because like, literally, if you're in go-to-market, you need to pitch like pretty much constantly, right?
Yeah.
And when I do interviews for my portfolio companies as well, where like they hire go-to-market people and I interview them and all of that stuff, like I always like ask that question. Like, I truly want to know because like to deliver a good answer, you need to know the products, you need to know the strategy of the company, the ICPs, you need to know like the industry, you need to know pretty much everything that is happening. So just like, it gives you an idea straight away.
One AI founder who totally nailed distribution.
OpenAI. They're really good at it. Very, very good.
Best GTM move you've ever seen?
I think Salesforce. I think like, I mean, people might like or dislike Salesforce. I have my own personal opinion as well on this. But like from a distribution or go-to-market side, they're the kings, right? Like that's the reality. They've nailed reseller ecosystem, the partner ecosystem, like direct sales, like across multiple markets. Like they're really good on the go-to-market side. Look at like Agentforce, like when they actually started introducing it last year, like everything has become since then about like Agentforce, right? Like they're really good on the go-to-market side.
Who's a founder that taught you something you'll never forget?
Founder taught me something that I will never forget. I would probably say Zina and John, right? So I was working at Synantec. We were doing AI voices and we ended up selling the company to Spotify. And one of the key things that that we did, initially we started opening the platform and we had a PLG motion. Then we ended up like closing the platform to actually focus primarily on like on the enterprise side so that you wouldn't be able to test it unless you went through all of these hoops. For me, that was like a really good insight on what works and what doesn't work over the long term. So at LM Labs, I applied exactly the same like understanding or like the same thinking. In the previous company, we were also like doing purely B2B, like closed ecosystem and everything, right? So two companies that essentially do the same and you see all of the good learnings and the bad learnings, like good things and bad things, then you go to the next one, you essentially build go-to-market from scratch. You essentially realize like you need to do PLG, you need to actually like land and expand model is the best method for sure.
Okay, now I'm going to give you two sentences that you will have to finish. So the first one is the future of AI GTM will be driven by.
I always think about like I'm trying to build the future of revenue. I'm not interested in like immediate sales. Like we do a lot of sales, and that's fantastic. Like that's why we have a team and all of that stuff. Closing contract is great, but I'm actually interested in building the future of sales or future of revenue.
And Carlos, last one. The best investors of the future will look more like?
Operators that actually ended up going investors. Like founders want to be backed by other founders or like top operators. That's the reality. I have zero doubts about it. You can help them. You can like tell them what went wrong, what went right. they will make their own mistakes and they will make their own choices, but they will have something to compare against.
Amazing. I love it. Carlos, everyone clap for, give it up for Carlos. This is it. It's a wrap. It's been amazing. Thank you so much. I loved it. I love the conversation so much. So insightful. I think founders will love it as well that will listen to this episode. Thanks so much for joining us and taking the time. I really can't wait to see you in Barcelona and continue the conversation in person.
Thank you so much, Martin.